Welcome to the Speed Trap Podcast. I'm Betsy.
And I'm Sophie. Join us weekly to stay updated on the latest racing news.
And to hear our thoughts and opinions on each topic.
And today we reveal who won the 2021 Speed Trap Championship.
So as you guys know, if you're a longtime listener, last year we decided to do our own little championship on our predictions of races and various other things in the sport. And so now that the 2021 season has concluded, so is our championship. Mm-hmm. And I was the 2020 reigning champion.
Yes.
Of the Speed Trap Championship.
You were the defending champion.
I was the defending.
You had everything to lose.
I was Lewis in this situation. And I lost. So that means I will humbly,
I'm the Max Verstappen of this relationship.
I will humbly hand over my non-existent trophy to you, Sophie.
Oh, well, thank you,
you
very much.
You creamed me this season. Creamed me.
I mean, I came back with a bit of a vengeance because I was like, how dare I lose to Betsy, who I was the one who got her interested in F1 in the first place. I was like, how did I lose to Betsy? Like,
no offense. Beginner's luck.
Well, no, because I think you did make some good predictions. Like, so I'm not going to discount your championship because you did do some really good logical work last season.
I also did some really weird stuff this season.
Right. I think we all kind of threw in some weird stuff because thinking back to 2020, there were a few oddball races, like just thinking about like Monza 2020. And then again, Brazil and Monza this year were wild card races. So like, I think we were thinking which races are going to be the ones where we see a potential new winner or random people on the podium that you wouldn't normally see. And we got a lot of that this season. So I think, you know, we weren't necessarily wrong to throw out some oddball choices. Except, should we start with, speaking of oddball choices, reviewing our championship standings for drivers that we predicted who would end up where? Because you made an oddball choice when we updated our predictions. Because we initially did a top five at the beginning of the season. Because obviously we're like, we're not really knowing what the midfield is going to be like, but we had a stronger feeling about the top of the grid and what that would look like. So as halfway through the season, we then did an updated where we filled out the entire grid of where we thought people would finish, which might be a little bit cheaty because we did have some like info from the races, but we did get the chance to change our top five, one thing in our top five, I think. And you made a really interesting choice. So
very
if you want to explain that.
Well, I thought that it would be a good idea to put Lando P3 in the championship and Max P4. Yeah, so I was very correct.
I don't know where you came from when you put Max P4. Like, I get potentially Lando finishing third, because I also did put that, because at that time he was having, like, a great, great season.
But I know, but that's the thing, is it's not like Max was having a
bad season
that far. Like, he was having a good season so far. And
right.
So I don't know why I thought that both Lewis, Bottas, and Lando would knock him into P4. Like,
was it maybe because of the amount of, like, you know, not, I won't say dangerous driving, but like he was being very scrappy in his driving at that point, and you were thinking he's going to crash out so often that Lando's going to keep up the consistency and take it off of him. And
I wouldn't try to justify my
like,
decision on that. I think
I don't know.
Just let that be.
I mean,
I don't know. Wishful thinking that Lando would be a big force like that. I mean, I do have to say that Lando was doing so well at the time that I made that prediction that, like, my support for Lando still stands.
He was arguably the most consistent driver the whole season, though, because I believe he only missed out on points at two races.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. Like, he scored in every other race. So I think it's reasonable to, like, expect that he might have finished higher than he did because of how good he was consistently, but we just saw some other drivers have some podiums and things that took him out of the top three contention. So our initial predictions were very similar to each other, our top five. So I had Hamilton, Verstappen, Bottas, top three, then Perez and Ricciardo. You had Hamilton, Bottas, Verstappen, then Perez and Ricciardo. So you flipped Valtteri and Max. But
I mean, I think from a big way, I was coming at it from last year's.
Mm-hmm. I think one of us put the exact order of... I think you put the exact order of the finishing last season, right? Like your
I
top
did.
Five. Yeah.
So original. I did. And I very wrong on almost all of those. And B, I mean, I think we need to talk about Daniel.
Yeah. We were so confident in him. Like, how did he manage to finish top five in a Renault in 2020 and then finish eighth in a McLaren, a Mercedes McLaren too, in 2021? Like, it's so jaw-dropping to think about that. God. Cyril's... Yeah. I wonder what Cyril's thinking. I miss him. I think we've talked about him a lot in our past few episodes.
I know.
But... he did show up in Abu Dhabi, and I believe
he looks healthier now. Did I say that last time? I probably did.
I think so.
He looks healthier. He got all his hair back. It's nice.
Yeah, maybe it's the tattoo, his new tattoo.
Yeah, that's true.
Also, I think when he went to Abu Dhabi, he was a guest in the Red Bull garage, which was funny to me. But I feel like he was definitely there supporting Daniel. I feel like he like fell in love with Daniel a little bit when Daniel was at Renault, which I mean, Daniel's a great guy, very charismatic, so I don't see why anybody wouldn't fall in love with him in, you know, a person-type way. Anyway, so looking at the rest of our predictions, I want to see if we had any odd, like, standouts apart from your Verstappen prediction and Daniel. So let's see what we got right first of all. We both put Charles P7. Which is where he did end up finishing. So shout out to us for predicting Charles. We also did put him ahead of Carlos, which didn't happen because Carlos...
I mean, that was a surprise. And that was for most of the season. It looked like Charles would finish ahead of Carlos.
Right. And then I think Carlos just had a beast second half of the season. And Charles had some bad luck, I think, too. Thinking about Monaco, first of all. I mean, he crashed out in qualifying, which did secure him pole position, but then he didn't get to start the race. So, you know, it's kind of maybe a little bit of karma for him there. But but then we did, and then that did end up with Carlos on the podium, right? Because he came second, right? And Lando came third. Yeah. Carlos finished second, Lando came third, and Valtteri won. So maybe... maybe that's what clinched it for Carlos to finish ahead of Charles, because he didn't finish like hugely ahead, but he did have quite a couple more points, which you maybe could equate to a podium. So maybe Monaco is what did it for them. But Carlos was like top form this whole season, so I think he does deserve where he finished, which was P5. Shut up.
Honestly,
sort of best of the rest, kind of, right?
Yeah. No, absolutely. He's the only driver who was not in one of the top
two
constructors' teams.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, Ferrari did, though, finish
third.
Mm-hmm. Third in the Drivers' Championship.
Which is exciting for me, because I want to see them fight again for some top spots. It'd be really nice.
It would be nice.
Let's see. What else did we get right?
Especially with this driver pairing. I'm excited.
Oh, me too.
Some good energy there, I think.
I could totally see them in a title fight. Potential winners, for sure. So, and they're like sort of next gen, like top tier drivers. So I'm hoping that we get to see at least one season where they get a chance to fight for the title, which I think 2022 will be a good year for Ferrari. I don't know why, but I have a feeling.
I think so too.
All right, shall we see what else we got right? We both got Pierre right, P9, which lovely to see him finish in the top 10. I think, is that his highest finish ever in a championship?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he got his most points he's ever scored in a season this season as well. Over 100, which was, I believe, the first time he scored 100 and over in a season.
Yeah.
So, Pierre is continuing to prove himself, which is lovely. Love to see that. We talk about Pierre a lot, but I think it's justified.
I think so, too. He's, like, driver of the year, I think, in a lot of ways for me.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think I said before. I don't know. I'll keep saying it. I think that's very, very true.
I think he said in an interview something along the lines of, like, I know I'm good, I just don't get the opportunities that other drivers get these days. Which, I mean, some people might, like, play devil's advocate and say you had an opportunity at Red Bull, but then it's like, was that a fair opportunity? He got half a season, you know? So there's that whole argument. But I would love to see him in a better car. But AlphaTauri is, like, clinging on to him because he's, like, their ruler now, basically.
So yeah.
We'll see.
And you have Yuki, who didn't have the season that we all wanted him to have. The season that we, I think, all expected him to have coming out of F2 so strongly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he only finished, you know, in comparison to Pierre, who got over 100 points, having, like, how many did he end up with? About 30 points? Is kind of abysmal.
Yeah, and he ended up P14, which is 5 spots behind Pierre in the championship, which we also both predicted right. So, you know, halfway through the season, we sort of saw the decline of Yuki's, you know, performance, and then, I guess, predicted correctly how far behind Pierre he would be. So,
I do think that he would have, had I originally done the predictions at the beginning of the season, I probably would have put Yuki higher.
Me too.
In the long run.
Probably closer to where Pierre is, actually, because, like, his first race was very promising, right? He scored points in his first race, which, like, for a rookie, impressive against a field of this caliber. But then after that, it was just very, like, mid-tier for him. But then his final race, P4. So there you go. Maybe he just needed a whole season to figure it out. But we'll see. We'll see next season, because he has been retained. But, I mean, I don't know what Red Bull's going to do, because they might pull what they did with Max and, you know, Danny Kvyat. My God, I forgot his name for a second. And then just, like, totally pull him out of AlphaTauri and then put in a driver from the outside or something. I don't know.
We'll see. I mean, we talked a lot about this earlier this season, about the future of Yuki Tsunoda and him probably going to Red Bull soon and the longevity of Sergio Perez at Red Bull. I don't know if my opinion has changed on that, but I don't necessarily know that it will be Yuki anymore.
Yeah, I have a similar notion about that, because I think if he was more of, like, a Verstappen character, or even Albon when he went to Toro Rosso initially, where they were just out of the gate, like, beast moding points for the team, and that's why they got quick promotions, I guess. Because if you looked at Alex's first half of the season 2019, before he got the Red Bull seat, it was very promising, and that's why they moved him up and moved Pierre down. But Yuki has never shown a level of consistency like that where it would justify moving him up so quickly. And Sergio, even though he didn't have, like, the best season as a Red Bull driver, like, he did still prove that he can be a great teammate for Max. And we did see that in, like, was it Abu Dhabi or Saudi? Where he... I think it was Abu Dhabi, right?
It was Abu Dhabi, yeah. He held off Lewis, yeah.
And that was, like, some great top tier racing. And then Sergio, of course, in Racing Point last season was incredible as well, so he has that experience to show, and that's why it's, they probably feel safer keeping him in there, even though he's not a part of the Red Bull family outside of just holding that race seat. So I don't know, but it's, I do similar... think, oh, go ahead.
I do think that having you know, we've talked about this a lot too. I think, you know, obviously Max isn't going anywhere anytime soon.
No.
And it's sort of been this kind of like, they're like trying out different teammates for Max. Mm-hmm. And obviously Daniel was good, but Daniel wasn't happy. And he was like, I don't see a future here. Like, I'm going to bail. Didn't really work out that well for him, but thus far, who knows? And then we had Pierre and we had Alex, and nothing, I don't think the shoe quite fit right. But I feel like this pairing between him and Perez seems to be pretty good.
Mm-hmm. They like each other personally.
Yeah. So that and helps, I feel like Perez's maturity is probably like a very like stable presence around Max. I bet he doesn't feel like he has to be as competitive because it's not sort of on that same age level as Pierre, Alex.
Mm-hmm. We also know too that Sergio is a very loyal driver to whatever team he's at, because when he was at Force India Racing Point, he saved that team personally. He stayed committed to that team. I mean, I don't know if it was simply because he feared that he might not have any other options because he wasn't able to prove himself yet because his car wasn't there to support his ability, but he really put his entire like heart into that team, and then the way they let him go was just such betrayal that I wonder if he was like, I'm going to take the love I had for you and give it to Red Bull, bye. And now he's become this like super loyal tool for Red Bull to use, because obviously like young drivers too, they still have like this attitude of like, I'm going to be at the top team, I'm going to be the best. So like, what if Red Bull isn't the top team and they get that opportunity to go to like, I don't know, a Mercedes or a Ferrari or whatever team is the best at the time? They could still do it because they're still young and they have years left. But then Sergio's finally got this opportunity to stick himself into, which was arguably the best car that this season, constructors wise, people would argue.
For most of the season, maybe.
For most of the season, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's going to definitely not try and betray them in any way. So he's not going to try and bid for a title when he knows that they're going to put it all for Max. If they give him that opportunity, I'm sure he'd go for it. But if he has, you know, the vulnerability of getting kicked out, I don't think he's going to try anything, because he doesn't want to lose out, especially at this point in his career. So I think that's why he's such a good choice for them.
Yeah, I feel like the team is finally kind of working harmoniously, which is super important.
Mm-hmm.
My only, I don't know if fear is the right word for it, or like reservation I have, I guess, for it, is that I don't think that Sergio will ever actually be able to win a title with Red Bull, because he's just not going to ever be their priority.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe he's okay with that. Maybe he's okay with that. And he'd just rather be helping win constructors' championships.
And he still has the ability to win races, which he has done. And I'm sure like having race wins on your record as a driver is so important as well, because only a limited amount of people get to be world champions in Formula One, and that's just how it goes. So if you can prove yourself as a race winner, you know, that's still really impressive, because that's quite a small category of drivers as well. So I'm sure if building up race wins will be important for him as well. So
especially after having such a long career and not winning and barely even getting podiums, I'm sure this is a very welcome change for him despite that. But that's totally the only sort of thing that I see, is like, there's, you have a future with Red Bull, but you also don't. You know.
Yeah. And speaking of changes and fun futures that might not last very long, Fernando Alonso, we both predicted right, P10, which I think, you know, considering it's his first year back after sitting out and the cars having changed quite a bit since he was in the sport, P10 might have appeared generous at first, right, to have him finish in the top 10. But he is a proven world champion, so I don't know if it was that generous, because you would expect him to be great, but then looking at his last seasons coming out of McLaren and stuff, it wasn't much to talk about. But he has really come into this and blown my expectations out of the water. I mean, I think you too, we would both say we had hesitations can't even speak, hesitations about Fernando coming back, as someone who's, you know, older, maybe past their prime, if that's possible, and coming into a team like Alpine, which we know isn't fighting for championships, and that's why he sort of left Formula One in the first place, right? Because he wasn't able to do that. And he came in with a completely different attitude than what he left with, and he really gave Alpine a gift with his ability. And the way he worked with Esteban was so great, because I was not expecting them to be as harmonious a pairing as they were, but it seemed to go really well. So very impressed with Fernando this season.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, I think that it was such a good pairing. Well, I think we got some interesting pairings this season, excuse me. We had a lot of like youngsters paired with like former world champions or like older mentors. You know, we had Lance and Seb at Aston Martin. We had Esteban and Fernando at Alpine. We had Sergio and Max. You know.
Sergio and Max. And then even like you could say Daniel and Lando, because Daniel was proven race winner and stuff as well. Finished third in the World Championship 2018, I believe. So he's, you know, a proven driver, so that pairing as well. Yeah. I mean, I liked some of the pairings we had. I think Ocon Alonso was the one that we weren't all expecting to be so like pleasant, because Alonso, we know, historically has a bit of a superiority complex, which I think he might have grown out of a little bit. Because he was like, their teamwork on track this year was very impressive. And we saw that multiple times. Like Hungary, definitely we saw that.
Yeah.
When he helped Esteban maintain a race win. And then in Qatar, when Alonso had the podium opportunity, Esteban held off Sergio for as long as possible to make sure Fernando could retain that podium position. So I mean, that radio, I say it so many times because I think it's so funny, and that we got to hear it when he said, tell Esteban to defend like a lion, because like just to hear that from Fernando, to, you know, communicate that sort of teamwork, and then we know that Esteban was probably saying similar things about Fernando in Hungary. It's just nice to see that, and I feel like we don't get to see that with a lot of other teammate pairings. Like most of the time we hear drivers talking about their teammates, it's like, tell them I want to go in front of them, they're moving too slowly, you know, or like, let me take over. So it's nice to see that for sure. And I don't know if Alpine are like really feeling about changing that up at all, because it's done so well for them. I mean, they did relatively well in the constructors, they finished ahead of some of their biggest rivals, so I think they're pretty comfortable with it, and it makes me worried about the future of their juniors. Obviously, we talked about this before with Oscar, but let's not get into that rabbit hole, because we'll be here for ages.
Well, I don't think that losing Daniel hit them as hard as a lot of people expected it to, including me. You know,
me too. I mean, I wonder what Cyril thinks. I wonder how he would have worked with Fernando, because I feel like they might have clashed a little bit potentially.
Maybe.
But also, we don't know what's going to be happening with the senior ranks in Alpine, because there's been rumors going around that Marcin, who is their current, I believe, sporting director, might be moving to Aston Martin now that Otmar's gone. I don't know. So we'll see what goes on there. Maybe Cyril's making a comeback, because he did appear in Abu Dhabi. We don't know.
Something we didn't mention in an episode yet, we mentioned in our live Twitter space yesterday.
Yes.
Or this weekend, is that team principal of Aston Martin, Otmar Schaffnauer, if I say that.
Schaffnauer. Yeah.
He is gone from Aston Martin and rumored to be heading towards Alpine, but we'll see. Who knows? Rumors are rumors at the end of the day. But it's interesting, I think, because we heard this rumor, what, months ago? And everyone was like, oh my God, that's true. And then nothing happened. And we were like, oh, okay, that was nothing. And then all of a sudden, it's like, Happy New Year. I'm out. I think his contract ended.
It's like, I wonder if it was Lawrence Stroll where he's like, after last season, we've dropped so dramatically that I don't believe in your philosophies anymore. I need you to resign and I'm going to put somebody else in your place that I have more faith in. Maybe.
No, I imagine that you're right. I mean, they really did have a bad season, especially coming from their car that they had, despite it possibly being illegal. some controversial issues with that. But just coming from that to this season, dropping that many places is tough to take, for sure.
For sure. I mean, I well, things could be completely different next season. We have no idea. So I think that's so exciting that we have no idea what's going to happen next season.
I do too.
Let's see. Before we take too much time just on the Drivers' Championship, any other things we got right? Let me look. We both got Mazepin right, last place. I think that was easily predicted.
Yeah.
What else? Let's see. I got Ocon right. You put him P13, I put him P11. And then sort of the Ocon Vettel Stroll thing was like the one that where we were all quite different on compared to each other, apart from the Max thing.
What was that?
So I got that order right. Ocon Vettel Stroll, that was the finishing order, 11, 12, 13. You put Vettel Stroll Ocon, which I think is interesting because I think normally people see me as more of the Seb diehard of the podcast, but and have more faith in him than what he's shown this season, but you had more faith in him than me going into the prediction. So
yeah,
and I mean you weren't far off. He did only finish one place lower than where you put him, so
yeah I was in the range, but yeah, still, I mean, a hard season for Aston Martin as a whole.
Yes, it was quite rough for them. Like, to go from, I believe they finished fourth, right? It was McLaren third, Aston fourth, or Racing Point fourth, which they were then known as, and then Ferrari fifth. Or no, was it Renault and then Ferrari? Or was it Ferrari then Renault? I think it was Renault then Ferrari, no?
Let me look.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it was that and then Ferrari.
Yeah.
Renault slash Alpine.
So to go from finishing ahead of Renault, now Alpine, and Ferrari, to finishing behind not only them, but also AlphaTauri, like, ooh. And
well, I mean, yeah, no, sorry. I was about to go off on a different tangent.
But I mean, it's so funny to me that the reason people say that Cyril got, you know, fired or whatever, it was because he was the scapegoat to blame for their poor performance, but they finished fourth and now
and their driver finished fourth in the championship.
Yeah, and now Alpine is finishing fifth, so they've gotten worse.
Yeah, I
so
mean,
what's going on?
I think that the thing was they were so close to being best of the rest and they just were not. And so they were like, who are you going to blame?
It's like,
to me, I'm like, that's ridiculous. But
the fact that they were so close shouldn't justify like changing their team principal. I mean, Carlos literally finalized it for McLaren, I believe in Abu Dhabi, when he went from last to first or something crazy like that. Or not first, last to like, was it fourth? Yeah, last to fourth or something.
I mean, he literally like, no, it was so incredibly close. So yeah, no, to me, I'm still kind of confused about the whole Cyril situation.
Me too. I think everyone will be until there's transparency, which will never happen. So let's see. Let's just see our final orders of what we predicted. And
before
then
we do that, sorry. I just want to take a moment and just talk about Ferrari.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we talk enough about how much they've improved between last year and this year.
Totally.
Like the amount that they've improved. They're back in P3. Like, that's crazy. They were down in the bottom three. Yes. Four? Bottom four. Bottom three?
What? They were P6.
They were P6.
Yeah.
Bottom four of the field in 2021. which rough. Is terrible.
Rough.
Terrible.
It is night and day, isn't it? Definitely.
Or 2020, I mean, not 2021. Sorry. It's 2022 now, and I'm like confused. What year is what year?
Oh, we all are. Yeah, no, definitely night and day. I wonder, because we know they use tokens, because we know that they had to use the same cars that they had last season, or 2020, but they got tokens for upgrading. We know that Mercedes didn't use any, because that was never reported on, which it should be in FIA documentation. Mercedes didn't use any tokens. Crazy to think about.
Yeah.
That they were still able, because they were so ahead of everybody with their car in 2020, like everybody else just caught up in 2021 type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ferrari did use their tokens and they made smart choices.
They did.
Because it definitely improved performance. Because their car 2020 was like, is this even drivable? We saw like so many clips of like them turning the wheel to the right and the car would go left. You know what I mean? Like
the understeer, oversteer, like everything that could go wrong with a car. What's going wrong with their car? It was bad.
Yeah.
I don't think what you're saying though is just kind of funny that everyone kind of just leveled up their car and Mercedes stayed the same. I wouldn't even say that. I think Mercedes had to make their car worse because they were required to do certain things to their car that weren't like legal anymore because
they couldn't have DAS.
They couldn't have DAS.
That's the first thing.
Which was a really big thing.
Yeah, that was like crazy for tire management, even though we saw Silverstone happen where the tire exploded. But still, that was happening to other people. That was probably more Pirelli's fault than anything. Yeah. But
and just conditions too.
But, and that's interesting too, though, right? It's because we know they were supposed to get new tires this season and they did tests and the drivers hated the new tires. So they just kept the ones from last season. And so it was like, will they explode? We don't know. And we did see explosions at one race. What was it? I predicted it. I can't remember. Was it Qatar?
There were a couple punctures at Qatar, but no explosions per se. I don't know.
Right. Was it Qatar? I think possibly. Yeah. So, you know, Pirelli, what are you doing? But next season they're going to the 18-inch tire rather than the 13-inch, so that'll be another new thing to see who can manage those better. But right, so our final orders we had, we both put Lewis P1, which some people might argue did happen, you know, without interference.
Did, but it didn't.
But let's not go into that dark place. I put Max P2, you put Bottas, which I think both were reasonable guesses when we were so early on. And then Bottas still had potential. I mean, so I won't fault you for putting him there. I put Lando P3, you put Lando P3, which at the time could have happened because there were inconsistencies with both second drivers, quote unquote, from the top two teams. And Lando was showing quite consistent point scoring.
But I don't think Max was the very.
I mean, I put Valtteri 4th, you put Max. We talked about that. Let's not go into that again. We both put Sergio 5th. He finished 4th, so he outdid our expectations. So good for him. We both put Daniel 6th. We both put Charles 7th. Charles did finish 7th. We both put Carlos 8th. Carlos finished 5th. We both put Pierre 9th. He did. Alonso 10th. He did. I put Ocon 11th, you put Vettel, Ocon was 11th, you put Vettel, I put Vettel 12th, you put Stroll, Vettel was 12th, I put Stroll 13th, you put Ocon, Stroll was 13th, we both put Yuki 14th, which he was, I put Kimi 15th, and so did you, George ended up being 15th, which yay, shout out to that P2 in Spa, which some people might still say is illegitimate, but it happened,
it is,
it is what it is. Then we both put Gio P16, Kimi was P16, so shout out Kimi. We both put George P17, it was Nicholas Latifi. We both put Mick P18, it was Gio. We put Latifi 19, and it was Mick. And we both put Mazepin P20, and he was, so. I got 8 right, you got 5 right. So I would say, like, I don't know how I did that. I think I saved myself with the Vettel, Stroll, Ocon order.
Yeah.
Which is where you lost out on the 3 points, because otherwise we were pretty much the same. So there we go. I mean, you weren't that far off because you were only like one position out either way. So you weren't terrible. It was just unlucky that, you know, Ocon got that win.
Oh, yeah.
And Seb's podium got disqualified. That was so hard to watch. So there's that. Constructors, moving on quickly. I got 5 right. You got 3 right. You made a big error when we updated our predictions, because we were allowed to make one change. We made our predictions for the entire constructors before the season started, and then we got to
right
make
after,
one change.
Winter testing.
Right after testing. And then we got to make one change halfway through the season, and your one change was to flip Williams and Alfa Romeo when you had Williams ahead, and that would have had you.
And what
so
was the
sad.
First race right after that? Spa.
Oops.
Mm-hmm.
So how you feeling?
I was very remorseful at the time, but I know that would not have saved me in the end, so it's okay. I'm just happy for Williams, though, you know.
I mean, who could have predicted Spa, though, to be fair? Nobody. Like, that whole race was crazy. Lack of race was crazy. And that was right after, that was like right after 24 Hours of Spa, where we saw Jack Aitken and, was it Callum Ilott, both got into crashes and got injured in 24 Hours of Spa? I believe so.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jack Aitken had a spinal injury and everything like that. Mm-hmm. So, and we know that obviously that track has a history of horrible accidents.
Yep.
And then we saw Lando have a horrible, what looked very scary, crash in qualifying, which shouldn't have even like really gone on in the first place, right? But then it did, and then they decided to do the 2 laps under the safety car to qualify as a race, which some people would still argue is absolutely insane. 'Cause we saw drivers even talking about how it was like unbelievably dangerous, and that they shouldn't have risked their lives even just to get a race classification and all that, which I agree with. But it is what it is, and it ended up with George's first podium. So there you go. I wonder how he feels about that, actually.
I don't know.
He
did qualify well, so.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Very true.
But speaking of Spa, they are making some changes to the track. Not sure what entirely, but construction has been spotted. So,
and they are changing the Radeon Eau Rouge corner slightly, so it's going to be safer.
I think they're changing the runoff. Oh my god, I just hit my microphone.
Yeah,
changing the runoff area.
Mm-hmm. It's supposedly going to stop it from being a flat out corner, which would make it safer, because if you're going full speed up there, that's where the accidents happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
But my one change I made was that, looking at my initial predictions, funny we were just talking about them. I had Aston Martin P3 because I believed in them so much after they copied Mercedes' car last season, or in 2020. So I was like, maybe they'll pull something off now that they've got all that, you know, information, technical information.
Mm-hmm.
They did not.
No.
And I moved them down. So I moved them from P3 to P7, and that bumped up McLaren, Ferrari, Alpine, and AlphaTauri, which then left me with having McLaren and Ferrari in the wrong order.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had everybody else right apart from Williams. So that lost me 3 points, and then something else I got wrong. Alpha. Yeah. So I lost 2 points with Alpha and Williams. So there you go. So I ended up with 5 out of 10, and you got 3 out of 10, and you would have had 4, or you would have had 5, because you lost 2 points by putting Alpha and Williams in the wrong place, because you had them right. So
I know.
There you go. But we did get Mercedes and Red Bull right. And I got Alpine, AlphaTauri, and Aston Martin, and Haas, right? And you got Haas, right, as well. So, there you go. Poor Haas, by the way. Like, they didn't even make an effort to do well this season. They were just like, it's all coming next year. Don't even look at us.
Is this coming next year?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I hope for Mick's sake, I hope so. That he gets a chance to fight in the midfield, at least to garner some practice, you know, rather than just leading his teammate by a minute every race, you know.
One thing we did not know, find out about yet, was Rookie of the Year, where we had both put Yuki, but in my opinion, I probably would say Mick had I...
Me too.
Been able to switch it? I don't know what the results will be. It'll probably be Yuki, but... For me, I sort of reckon.
Yeah.
It might be. I think it could be Mick.
I think so. He was more consistent, for sure. He did crash a few times, but so did Yuki. So, you know, actually, I think the most crash damage was Mick in terms of dollar amount. And then it was Charles. And then it was Yuki, I think was the top three. So that's funny to say that Mick was more consistent. But I think Mick in the consistency was more to do with beating his teammate. Like, he was always better than Mazepin. Apart from...
Difficult.
Yeah, right. I mean, how much does that prove of his ability? Because Mazepin isn't great, you know? But still, Mick. And everyone loves him for just being a great person, so...
Yeah. He's a fan favorite.
Yeah, that's true.
Man, Yuki, of the people.
Yuki did have some moments, though, where he was great. But then there was a lot of...
Yeah, but they were moments.
Right.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of just like, where is he? Does he exist in this race? What's happening? You know? Yeah. And he did have quite a few penalties as well. So there's that. Mick didn't have, I believe he probably only had like a couple of the whole season. Yuki had quite a lot. So there's that that could play into it as well. But yeah, I would say for me, Mick probably would be rookie and agree with you on that. All right. Yeah. So, speaking of teammate dynamics, we also predicted which teammate we thought would finish better than the other. And we both did, like, pretty similar. I got 6 out of 10, you got 5 out of 10. Our one that was, like, so hard to think about was McLaren, because we did both put... Daniel ahead of Lando, but that's coming off of the year where he finished 5th in the Drivers' Championship in a Renault, and Lando had finished behind Carlos at McLaren, and we saw Daniel as this sort of alpha male coming into the team, and we weren't expecting Lando to actually be the alpha driver. And so, yeah, I guess we both were just wrong in that case.
Yeah.
Which... Do you want to talk about that teammate dynamic briefly? It's like, it's interesting how much Lando became the lead driver over Daniel when Daniel clearly was going into moving out of Red Bull, aiming to be the number one in whatever team he was going to, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's a lot to say on that. It's
No.
Surprising.
Lando surprised me, actually.
Lando, since he got to F1 in 2019, has been improving ever since. Like, he's never, in my opinion, plateaued at any point. Like, he's always getting better. And so, Daniel and Lando met. Well, I don't know, actually. Let's just say, though, had Lando been 2020 Lando in 2021 and Daniel had been McLaren in 2020, like, I think that we would have been correct. That was a very roundabout way of saying it, but I think that they would have been more on an even playing field in 2020 than they are now.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean... Whenever Daniel has moved, I mean, his first year at Renault wasn't as good as his second year, right?
But also the car that Renault had when he was there for his first year was really bad.
True. Yeah. And then he also had a different teammate, right? He went from having Hülkenberg to Ocon, And I think that probably changed things quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And then Lando, I think maybe he was a little bit intimidated. And I wonder if it's to do with how much Lando would share info. Like, I wonder if he was as welcoming as, like, say, Charles was to Carlos, or Max was to Sergio, or, you know, of the likes, or maybe more so Alex was to Sergio in guiding him for the seat that he gave up for Sergio,
mm-hmm.
which Sergio talked about, and we've talked about before that Sergio's very openly humble about how much help he got from outside sources. So
exactly,
that's very nice. So I wonder what, because we don't know, but I don't think Lando would like hold back, because he would want to see McLaren continue to be good, because I know his relationship with Carlos, they were both very much like a very, very, very good pairing, and that they would share with each other,
mm-hmm.
for the constructors. So I don't know if Daniel was maybe just like, I need to prove myself and I don't want your help, or Lando was, figure it out on your own, you want to be the alpha, prove yourself to me. I don't know, but I don't know, probably is nothing like that. It was probably just like, the car was so different for Daniel, and it was his first time in a Mercedes engine, but it was also Lando's first time with a Mercedes engine, so I don't know. But he did have that car last season and Daniel didn't, so there's also that. And we also know Carlos, in comparison, did get to take McLaren style gear shift paddles to Ferrari, and that gave him an advantage. So it's hard to say, there's no like criteria that you can really put them up against to say who was a better adapter to their new car, because everybody had a different situation. So
I mean, I still think, though, and you're right, it's hard to say because there's, it's all different, but for my money, Carlos, I think, adapted the best.
Oh, I agree totally. Yeah. Like, to come into Ferrari that had a temperamental car last season and beat your teammate who's been at that team for what, going on 3 seasons now,
mm-hmm.
or going on 4 after this
season. Yeah, 2022 will be 4, yeah.
Yeah, so...
No.
Impressive.
3.
3? Oh, 2019 was his first year.
Yeah, yeah.
So 2019, 2020, 20... No, he'll be going on 4, because 2019 included his 3 seasons.
You're right. I can't count.
No, you're fine. It's, you know, we're both a bit tired. It's okay. I mean, rehashing Formula One Championship is like a little bit ad nauseum too, because I'm sure everybody's sick of hearing about it at this point, in terms of like who should have actually won the championship and blah 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 blah. Anyway,
well, I think with this episode we can put that all to rest. Yeah,
this is where we'll stop talking about 2021 and
we go will into put that on the shelf.
Yes,
yeah,
maybe to be brought up at the end of next season when we're like, it happened again, Abu Dhabi was fixed. No, I don't know. Can you imagine though?
I'm triggered. I'm quitting.
We can't even watch 2022 anymore. Okay, no. Right. Let's avoid that. Here's where we split. I said Seb would do better than Lance, and he did, but that could be put down to a podium position, right?
Which it is, kind of.
Which he did earn, technically, so he did prove himself there. But he could have had 2 podiums, but one got taken away, sadly. I still feel betrayed. We don't know what happened to that trophy, because as far as we knew, Seb still has it, and yeah, I don't know if Lewis will ever get that trophy. Maybe not. I don't know.
He's like, but, nah, I have too many. Just keep it.
Yeah, he doesn't even know where all his pole position tires are. That was funny when he was
that
like...
That was so funny.
I don't know where they are. I wonder if it's just been random, like, marshals at tracks have been taking them home every time he gets one.
I would, low-key.
I would.
I'd be like, oh, I'm going to take this to Lewis. Don't worry, I got it.
Oh, dear. All right, another one where we opposed each other. I said Fernando would finish ahead of Esteban. You said Esteban would finish ahead, and Fernando did finish ahead, which I think I felt like when I said that I was making like a wild card move, but then he did it, mm-hmm. and it still impresses me that he was as good as he was this season.
No, me too. Which especially after Esteban having a win, to still have Alonso beat him.
Right.
Props to that.
I still feel like kind of patronizing though saying that because he is a two-time world champion, but that was in a completely different era of the, that was pre-hybrid era. Like
that was a long time ago.
2005, 2006. Like
it was like 15 years ago.
Yeah. And, but yeah, very impressed by him. So good for him. And we both said Charles for Ferrari, but Carlos came in beast moded, which we just talked about. We were right about Pierre, which I think would have been, if Yuki came in and beat Pierre, that would have been like, get rid of Sergio, put him in Red Bull immediately type of thing, I think.
Yeah.
But didn't happen. We both said Kimi, and Kimi did beat Gio. That was kind of expected, I think, from most people. Although they were like slightly even for a lot of the season, and then Kimi just pulled off some like good points performances. Okay, Haas, we both said Mick, which he did, which I think was expected, and then we both said George for Williams, which obviously happened. So it'll be interesting to make these same predictions next season because we do have some very interesting pairings coming up, right, with Lewis and George. I think that'll be one to keep an eye on in terms of who will do better. And that sounds like weird saying that because George is still kind of unproven in that way, and Lewis is obviously 7-time world champion, so you would think it'd be obviously one over the other, but you never know. We've got Valtteri and Guan Yu Zhou coming in, like who's gonna do better there. We've got Alex Albon, Latifi at Williams. That's going to be interesting.
Alex.
I have a feeling about that too. I think it might be Alex. Who else have we got? I mean, we still got the Leclerc-Sainz duo. That'll be a fun battle. That'll be close, I think.
For sure, for sure.
Who else? We don't have anybody else new, right? Apart from Guan Yu stepping into Alpha. Well, Alex is kind of new, but not really. But,
yeah.
And then everybody else is the same. Like, I'd like to see what happens with Alonso Ocon next season, because I think Esteban might come back and try and really get one over on Fernando.
They seem like a good team. They do. I think my biggest curiosity...
Ricardo Norris? No?
George and Lewis.
George and Lewis. Okay. Yeah, I wonder what the nature of that relationship will be, whether like it's your first season, George, like you have to be out to Lewis because Lewis is our guy, or it will be a free-for-all.
Well, I think the interesting thing is we saw George in a Mercedes, though we saw him race against Bottas. We never saw him race against Lewis,
right? But when we saw him race against Bottas, he did appear to be stronger at that circuit. He just had bad luck.
That's my point. So, he seems like he could take Bottas most of the time in that race.
Right.
Where so I don't know if he could take Lewis. That's my point.
Right. But if he's proving to be a better, more skilled driver than Bottas was. But that's in one race, so there's not a lot to go off of. But in that race, he was proving to be more skilled in that car, even with the like the shoes that were too small and the seat that was too small and the suit that was too small and the lack of elbow room for him to move, you know? And he was coming in with like bruised knees and stuff because he couldn't fit in the car properly, and he still was doing better. Like, I think that's an interesting, you know, bit of data to look at in terms of how he might do against Lewis when he can actually fit in the car properly with shoes that fit him. So we'll see. I'm excited for that pairing. I want to see how much Sergio can improve next season, because if he steps up, he could that could be an unstoppable force in Verstappen Perez, because they're both quite good. I am interested to see though the McLaren teammate pairing and how that will continue, because it seems like the second half of the season after Monza and the double podium, the only team, by the way, this season to have a 1-2, which is crazy.
Which is insane.
Crazy. What will happen? Because the relationship as people improved, I think, after that. They seemed to get on better. There was less awkward, like, we have nothing in common tension. So then will that play into next season? And also, like, I don't know how McLaren's going to do constructors-wise. We don't know how anybody's going to do, but I hope they can figure something out to be competitive. I'd love to see like a 2010 situation where we have like five drivers in the running for the title. That'd be pretty cool.
Me too.
And it'd be cool to see some of the old guard against, like, the newcomers. Like, we have, like, Hamilton fighting with Alonso and, you know, like, Leclerc and Verstappen and Norris. Like, that would be an insane title fight to think about.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We'll see for sure. But just to finish off this episode, we did also, like you said at the start, make predictions about every race. Mm-hmm. And we, our point system was, we would do the top three, and if we got all of the people on the podium right, but in the wrong order, we would still get points for them. Okay, so we would get 3 points if we got them right, and in the right position, it would double to 6, and then so we would get like a total of like 18 points would be the maximum we could score for a podium. Mm. So that was that, and then we get a point for predicting pole right, a point for predicting fastest lap right,
mm-hmm.
a point for predicting how many safety cars. We were allowed to predict 2 DNFs for every race, so it was 1 point for each DNF if we got them right. We were predicting the weather, so that was 1 point. And then we would make 2 random predictions. So, for example, in Abu Dhabi, I said Gasly top 7, Carlos top 5, and you said both Alphas top 10 and Perez top 5. We would get a point
for each of those. And they all DNF'd?
And then everyone DNF'd. And we would get a point for each of those. So that's how we would score each race. And we added those totals up with our championship order, which if we got all 20 drivers right, it would double, so we would have 1 point for each correct answer, and if we got all right in the correct order, the points would double. And the same for the constructors, if we got all 10 right, it would double. Neither of us did that, so we never got
I did that point. Last year.
You did do that last year, which yeah. really helped you out. It you might have screwed
saved
me over.
Might have saved
But we did the same thing for the teammate battles. If we got all 10 right, then we would double. None of us did. Mm-hmm. None of us got anything fully right this year. So we missed out there. But the grand total, without the rookie of the year, because we didn't... We should know that, because the FIA prize-giving gala happened, but I don't know if that was included. I don't recall it being a thing. I think we would have known that by now. So, without that included, the grand total is, for Betsy, 179 points, which is very impressive.
Thank you so much.
Very impressive. And me, 225 points, which I still don't know how I managed to get such an advantage, because I don't think our predictions for each race were that askew from each other's. So, I'm surprised. I think I got a lot of help in
you getting more. You weren't that bad. Don't worry.
I mean, there were some races. I think the podiums, I think I managed to get more accurate podiums than you, and that's where mm-hmm. it helped, because that's where we get the most points.
Yeah.
But, for example, one race where I really gained points on you was Mexico, because mm-hmm. I got the podium right, and you got one person on the podium right. So I got, whoops. You got 5 points for that whole weekend, and I got 18. So it's like things like that where the podiums really helped me out more. Because I think I was trying to play safer, because last season I remember putting so many wildcard podiums, because I was like, it's their home race, I want them on the podium. Or like, you know, they haven't done anything random, let's put them. So yeah. I think I was trying to be more reasonable and realistic, which was less fun, to be fair. It is less fun. But, I mean, even saying that, this season was quite unpredictable because of how close it was, so...
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, it just became flip-flopping Max and Lewis.
Right. And then even looking at the best of the rest battle and, like, who would finish P3 was exciting. And, like, we didn't really know anything about the midfield because everyone was closer this season than they were last season.
Mm-hmm.
So that was fun. And yeah. I hope, like, what they're predicting with the car performance next season, it will be closer and we will see more battles throughout the field rather than just... you know, 2 teams up the front and like 4 in the middle. I hope we see all of them fighting in the same spots, which probably won't happen because it's the nature of Formula One to not be like that. Yeah. But we'll see.
I really hope that we keep saying this. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what it's going to be like next season. It's a clean slate. I really hope that that's true and we're not overeager for that to be true.
Yeah, and it's not just going to be the same. Mercedes Red Bull to top two again.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, it probably will be, but the midfield is a wild card for the new tech regs, so. Because they have less money, but then there's the budget cap, so I don't know.
Is and Williams has more money now because they got Burlington Capital, and they also just won their lawsuit against Rocket.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
I didn't see that. Okay, congratulations.
Rocket did not pay their money back in 2019, I believe. Wow. So they were suing them because they did not get their sponsorship money.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. And also, Aston Martin just lost a huge sponsor. Yes. So they have less money. Although they still are funded by a billionaire. So I don't know how much that will affect them.
Okay, but
they'll probably be fine. And then well, I mean,
money doesn't last long in Formula One.
Oh, no, no, no.
If he continues to have a bad team without sponsors, we could put him right out of business.
Oh, my God. Let's just start our own team.
Crowdfund.
And then whoever is part of our crowdfund can have their name on the livery as part of a sponsor. That'd be sick. A whole livery is just made up of people's names.
Honestly, it'd be really cool.
Into that.
One day.
But maybe potentially one day that might be a thing in the far, far future. Some sort of like crypto billionaire or something will come in and do it. Or I don't know. That'd be interesting.
Honestly, probably.
Maybe Lauren Stroll will become a crypto investor. Maybe Elon Musk will start a Formula One team because he loves aerospace engineering.
I think he'd probably go to Formula E instead of Formula One.
That's true, because of electric cars. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
That would be a huge boost for Formula E. That'd be crazy. Or Extreme E even, or both. I don't know.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting. Maybe we can do an episode where we predict a championship if Elon Musk joined Formula E, what would happen? I don't know. That'd be so funny. I don't even really like him as a person, but he's got a lot of influence, so I don't know what will happen there.
But we'll bring in a lot more Americans, that's for sure.
Oh, totally.
Well, congratulations for winning this year's Speed Trap Championship.
Thank you. You're probably going to win next year. So.
I will get you back next year.
We'll flip-flop.
Redemption.
I'll be 2023 champ. I'm seeing it now.
Okay, I got even numbers. You got odds.
That's it. it's like snooker, where like I'm spots and you're stripes. Or is that pool? No, that's one of them. I don't know. I'm not very good. That's billiards. One of them. They're all the same game in my
girl,
opinion.
You're bad.
Oh dear.
Anyways, one thing I will shout out on is that we are now doing live Twitter Spaces. So you guys should all come and tune in, chime in, share your thoughts, opinions. Sophie and I don't talk that much. We more like to hear what everyone else is saying and give you guys
moderate
a chance.
More than anything.
Yeah, yeah. Make sure everyone has a chance to speak their piece. Sometimes we get some really cool people on there. Like last night we had Bryce and Sullivan and everyone was a little bit starstruck, but it was great to hear from him.
It was cool.
He's a really... Cool. Great guy, so always fun. So please come join us. Stay tuned on our Twitter and Instagram for when those will be. Probably weekends, but hey, maybe a weekday every now and then.
And if you are interested in finding out where they are, we are at Speed Trap Pod on all social media. And we have an email address if you have any longer inquiries that would not fit into a tweet or a DM, speedtrappod@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. And if you're still able to donate, we would love that. You can head to anchor.fm/speed-trap-pod and hit the donate button. You can make a monthly donation or one-time donation, whatever you prefer.
Thank you for listening to the Speed Trap Podcast.
As always, we appreciate your support.
To stay involved in the conversation, reach out to us on social media at Speed Trap Pod.
Speed Trap's official music was created and produced by Boxed Okami. You can find more of his work on Instagram @BoxedOkami.
See you next week.